Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org, as well as access podcast on either of those websites as well. Let me just start with today is I wanted to jump right into the subject. Today is August 27th, 2014. The markets were mixed today. The Dow closing up at 17,122, the NASDAQ down at 4569, and the S&P up at 2000. Last week, I had Rod Young in the studio with me. We shared some of our planning stories and experiences. We had a great show. I want to thank Rod for being here, of course. And this week, I am talking about education planning. Seems to get more attention once school starts, but I'm here to tell you that it needs your attention year round, and starting, now would be a good idea for planning for next January when you're filling out FAFSA forms for those kids who are going to school next fall. And I'd also like to add that it's not just the parents and the students who should be paying attention to this, but the grandparents as well, because quite often we find that grandparents want to help out with some of the college education costs. And so we're going to hopefully provide you with some interesting and informative information tonight. We are live. If you have questions, you can call in. The phone number is 610-758-8810, or you can email questions through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. Judy Ann is in the studio with us this evening. She'll answer your calls, take your information, ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. If you want to talk on air, if you don't want to talk on air, just give your question to Judy Ann. She'll write it down and she'll bring it into the studio. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And again, the number to call in is 610-758-8810 or through email at yourfinancialchoices.com. So we are going to talk about education planning tonight. And what I want to start with are some helpful websites, and then talk about some deadlines for filing for financial aid, and then education savings opportunities, tax credits, and finally, some of the details of the FAFSA form. So I ran through a FAFSA form today. I did like a little example just to kind of get ready for the show, to get comfortable and ready for questions. Now, again, folks, typically, and I'm going to talk about the deadlines, but typically we're not looking at filling those out until like next January. But if you understand the information that's going to be needed to do that FAFSA form and some of those numbers, you may be able to do some planning around now, between now and January. It might help you when you eventually file for financial aid. So I thought I'll go through that so that I could better inform you tonight on the show. So I went through the FAFSA form. I also went through a more detailed form of how to calculate the expected family contribution. So typically that's kind of behind the scenes. You don't really see it on the FAFSA form. You just fill out the FAFSA, or you could run through a FAFSA calculator to get an estimated benefit or best estimated aid number. So I actually went through the calculation for the EFC formula. So I printed off all, let me tell you how many pages, 36 pages or so. I printed 36 pages and kind of went through what is in that formula and what it's about so I could better understand it. And I hope I can retain it for the rest of my life, because I never want to go through this little exercise again. So let's start by talking about the websites. I want to say that education planning can be quite complicated. I think it's a very stressful period for people. I think it's especially stressful for parents who have to struggle with sending their kids off to college for the first time. That in itself can be stressful for parents. Some parents don't want to see their kids go, their babies go. It's a sign that they're getting older themselves. And then the other stressful part of it is getting all this financial information together. I think so many people resist paying attention to their financial situation, and then all of a sudden you're forced to when you go to apply for financial aid. Some people don't do it, so you may be missing out on financial aid. Some people think they just aren't going to qualify for financial aid. Maybe you won't. Maybe you won't qualify for federal financial aid, but that doesn't mean that the schools might that they won't be able to give you financial aid. So sometimes there's federal aid and then there's institutional aid from the colleges. So the FAFSA form is very important for federal aid, but it's probably even more important for the college aid as well. So to understand this whole process for those people who like to do things themselves, there are some websites out there that will help give you some understanding around it. I have to tell you, though, that when you go to these websites, there's so much information. When we talk about, you know, I remember when we were first talking about the internet and people couldn't understand it and they called it the World Wide Web. And the reason it's the web is because you get caught up in it and you just could keep going and going and going. And that's what happens on some of these websites as well, because there's just so much information available that you can click on one thing, then you can click on the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. So having said that, I still find a lot of good, valuable information. So one of the websites to go to kind of get some general information is a great site called savingforcollege.com. Joe Hurley set that company up many, many years ago. I think eventually he sold it, but I think he's still involved. And so that's called savingforcollege.com. Lots of information there. It really started with the whole introduction of 529 plans, which are college savings accounts, where he developed this website to kind of help people navigate the 529s and what they're about and the different attributes of all the different states having all these different 529s, the different kinds that were available. But it has evolved to be more than just that. There's lots of information there about financial aid and different ways to pay for college, and that is a good place to start, savingforcollege.com. There's also the government websites that obviously when you go to fill out the FAFSA form, there's FAFSA, that's F-A-F-S-A, so Frank, Alice, Frank, Sally, Alice, .ed for education, .gov for government, so FAFSA.ed.gov. That's the website you're going to go to fill out the FAFSA form. Don't be misled by other sites that might be like FAFSA.com and things like that. You're going to a government site, it's usually going to end in .gov. So FAFSA.ed.gov, that's where you're going to access the FAFSA form. But from there, you can also access other help and other information. So one of the other sites that you can link to from there is studentaid.ed.gov, student aid, A-I-D, that kind of aid, studentaid.ed.gov. So you either can go directly to that website or through the FAFSA.ed.gov website. That studentaid.ed.gov website has so many links to great information to help you understand it, and that's where I think you can get kind of caught up in the web. So for example, I printed off several of the articles. One is wondering how the amount of your federal student aid is determined. Well, they can kind of give you some basic concepts, but until you kind of print off the EFC formula and everything else, then you really get an appreciation for how it's calculated. But so there is an article on there. There's an article on the federal Pell Grants, on federal Supplemental Education Opportunity Grants, different Department of Education low interest loans. So then when you kind of click on some of these links, then there's going to be other links. For example, when we talk about low interest loans, There's one that will say, what's the difference between a direct subsidized loan and an unsubsidized loan? Am I eligible for a direct subsidized loan? Is there a time limit? How do I apply? How much can I borrow? What are the current interest rates? So there's so many different links that you can go to from there, or just, you know, scroll down the page to get to what you want. So lots of good articles on that website, which is, again, studentaid.edu.gov. So we've talked about websites. When we come back, tons of information there. We're going to talk about some of the important dates to pay attention to when we're looking at financial aid. The phone number, if you have questions, is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. For more information, visit wdiy.org.
And welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and we're talking about education planning tonight. Why tonight when we fill out financial aid applications in January? Well, because now is when we're usually thinking about paying for tuition and how is that going to work and how do we pay for it? Well, if you're feeling the pinch of having to pay for your children's tuition and you didn't fill out a FAFSA form to apply for federal aid and or college aid, well, now is the time to think about setting your goals for January, when there might be a chance for you to fill out a financial aid form for next year. So we just talked about some of the websites that are available for you to get more information. And I talked about studentaid.ed.gov and, of course, the fafsa.ed.gov website. One thing I just wanted to point out on the studentaid.ed.gov website, I told you there was different information that was available, and one of them was the U.S. Department of Education low-interest loans that some students may qualify for. When you're filling out a financial aid form, you're going to get a financial aid report package back, and in that financial aid package, they're going to let you know if you're eligible for any financial aid. Financial aid could be free aid, or financial aid could be, as Joe Hurley from Saving for college.com calls it, self-help aid. Self-help aid he deems to be loans and or work study. So when we talk about student loans, I found in this article they talked about the current interest rates, and it looked like the direct loans, these are government loans, for loans that are disbursed on or after July 1st of 2014 and before July 1st of 2015 are running at 4.66%. Those are direct subsidized loans and direct unsubsidized loans for undergraduates. For graduate unsubsidized loans, the rate is at 6.21%. So that was a bit of a hike from what it was in the prior year, which was 3.86 and then 5.41. And then the difference between subsidized loans and unsubsidized is, if they're subsidized loans, the federal government says, well, you qualified for a loan and you qualified for basically interest deferment. You can have the loan and they're not going to charge you interest during your education, and your loan will stay that amount. But then once it comes time for you to pay it, then you're going to pay, you know, ongoing interest. For unsubsidized loans, the interest starts the minute you take the loan. And you can elect to pay it during your years of education so that that interest doesn't accrue and add to the loan. Or you can let it defer, but then your loan's going to be more than what you originally took because the interest has accrued and been added. So that's an unsubsidized loan. All right, so that's some of that. I had a question come in from Mark in Bethlehem. He asked, is there a way parents can save money tax-free for young children in a charter school And can you write off those payments to a charter school? That's his first question. And then there's going to be a second question. As far as saving money for children in a charter school, the charter schools, I think, are still considered, I thought, public schools. So maybe the charter schools do have a fee. I wasn't aware of that. So if there's a fee for a charter school, the 529 plans that I'm talking about for college savings, those are only eligible or available for college cost or graduate work, not for elementary or high school education. There is something called a Coverdell that is available for, I'm trying to quickly look that up right now. I don't see too many people doing them really anymore, but the Coverdell is similar to like an IRA, and you can put money in that account and then use that for private schools. So that's, it's then if it grows, you get the tax-free earnings on it if you then use it for elementary education. So if I can find more information on the Coverdell, I'll certainly let you know. Let me just see. I can't find it right away, but there is something called the Coverdell, and that is something that you could use for non-college. So that's one thing. So I hope that, Mark, that helps. And then you had a second, and then can you write off those payments to a charter school? No, you can't. Then the unrelated second question, let's see, you're saying that you're worried that the stock market will collapse in the next few months. Is the government prepared? My thoughts. No, I don't really have any thoughts about that. I try not to panic about anything. I'm a Pollyanna, and I always think everything's going to work out, and so far in my life it has. So no, I don't worry about that. All right, Mark, and then at my next break, Mark, if I can find something on the Coverdell, I'll let you know. It's not very big amounts, unfortunately. I think it's like $2,000 is how much you can put in a Coverdell education savings and account, an ESA. And again, it's not big amounts, so it's not like you're going to save a ton. And you might, unless you started it earlier, you might not have enough accumulated even to make it worthwhile to save. So, but that is an option for you. Okay, folks, if you have questions, the number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. So if you have questions, you're welcome to call, and we can take either live or off-air questions, whatever you're more comfortable with. So we just talked about some of the information that's available on websites. Let me talk about briefly about some important dates. So the federal aid application deadline, that's that FAFSA form I was talking about, the federal aid application deadline for the July 1, 2014 through June 30, 2015 year is June 30, 2015. For state or college aid, the application is as early as January of 2014. That's for this fall. So you could have put in the application as early as January of 2014, but the deadline depends on the state. So for Pennsylvania, all first-time applicants at like a community college, certain educational institutions, must be received by August 1st, 2014. So you're past that. And all others by May 1st, 2014. So for the college aid for this fall, you're already too late. That was due a long time ago, which is another reason why you shouldn't procrastinate. You got to get jumping on this stuff right away. Have your records all in order so you can file your tax return early enough, or at least have it completed with fairly good estimates so that you can do your FAFSA form in January as soon as possible. But I just did want to point out that there's still an opportunity for federal aid that may be available for people for this upcoming fall and into next spring. Now, I said this was by state. I think it's interesting to note that for New Jersey, for this fall semester, the date for filing for financial aid is October 1st of 2014. That's for the fall and spring semester. And for the spring term only, you have until March 1st of 2015. So it seems a little odd that you could file for financial aid kind of after the period where you would be going to school. I'm not sure how it works. Never had it happen. So you're too late for state aid for Pennsylvania, maybe still available for Fed, and maybe still available for New Jersey. So just be prepared and ready for January of next year. Understand your deadlines. And the nice thing about the FAFSA, the website, if you go there and you print out, you can print out a PDF copy of the actual FAFSA form, which stands for Free Application for Federal Student Aid. They have all these deadlines on the right-hand side, right on the first page of the FAFSA application. So lots of information available there. If you have questions tonight, we're talking about education planning. The phone number is 610-758-8810 or yourfinancialchoices.com. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have vinyl albums or 45s on your shelves that are taking up space and gathering dust? Why not donate them for a good cause? WDIY will receive profits from the records, and you will receive a tax deduction. For more information or to arrange for drop-off or pickup, call 610-694-8100 extension 3 or visit WDIY.org.
Okay, and welcome back to the show. This is Your Financial Choices and your host, Lori Siebert. We are talking about education planning this evening. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Or you can send questions through email at yourfinancialchoices.com. Now, my last caller had asked about saving money for like a charter school, elementary. That was Mark in Bethlehem. And the Coverdell account I mentioned, they kind of go by education savings accounts, ESA. That is something that you can pay qualified education expenses of a designated beneficiary. Contributions to an ESA are non-deductible. Earnings in the account are tax-free if used for qualified education expenses, and the total contribution limit to all ESAs set up for any one beneficiary from all contributors is $2,000 per year. So I had mentioned it's only $2,000, not a lot. Any individual may contribute to an ESA, and then there's income phase-out ranges, though. So if you make a contribution, it depends on your income. So you just want to make sure that you make, if you're going to do that, that you meet all the requirements, etc. Okay, folks, so we're talking about education planning. The phone number this evening, 610-758-8810. If you don't want to talk live on air, you can give your question to Judy Ann, and she will write it down and bring it into the studio, and I'll do my best to answer it. We've gone over websites. We've gone over some of the important dates to pay attention to, wanting you to get ready to do your FAFSA in January. Let me see what else I want to go on. Let's see. I wanted to talk about just paying attention to the FAFSA. For parents and grandparents who have college education accounts for their children and or grandchildren, even aunts and uncles, I want you to pay attention as we go through the show, because I'm going to talk a little bit about how to use 529s and how that might affect the financial aid calculations. When I mentioned going to the FAFSA, you have to know when you go to fill out the FAFSA how they're counting income, what are they counting as income, taxable income, not taxable income. So make sure we pay attention. And to that degree, we're going to talk about education savings opportunities. Now, I did have another call come in from John from Center Valley. Thanks, you guys, for calling in, by the way. And John asked, on a 529, can that be used to pay an existing student loan or a Parent PLUS loan? No, John, it can't be used to pay a student loan. Let me give you an example, though, so that you maybe understand when you can use it and when you can't. If you took out a loan to pay for school in August, let's say, to pay in September the tuition. So pretend I've taken a $10,000 loan and I have paid the tuition in September with that loan money. So now I've had $10,000 of tuition expense. John, by the way, if that's the case, then you may qualify for education credits for your child, your student, because I have sometimes people tell me they don't qualify for the credits because they used a loan. They didn't actually pay it. I said, no, it counts as being paid. It counts as if you've paid the tuition, even if you take a loan. So that's one lesson, John. Then you asked, can you take the money out to pay an existing student loan? If you had the tuition cost in the same year, you can take a distribution out of the 529 and use that money. Technically, you would be paying the loan. But you want your distribution from the 529 to match up to the year that you have qualified education expenses. So the loan is not a qualified education expense to pay it back. So paying back your student loan is not a qualified education expense. Tuition is a qualified education expense. The room and board, that type of expenses, those are qualified education expenses that you can use 529 monies for. So if you did all that in 2013 and in 2014 your student had no qualified education expenses and now you're just paying back the loan, then no, you can't use 529 distributions to pay the loan in 2014. The qualified education expenses have to match up to the year of distribution. So I hope I was clear enough on that. Thank you for your call. I appreciate it. All right, folks. So some education savings opportunities. People save money in very different ways for their children's college education. And they save in different ways because they have different approaches to how they think this is all going to unwind for them for saving for college. Some people just save the money in their bank accounts. Some people save the money in an investment account, like a brokerage account, maybe in joint names with the, you know, husband and wife. They have a separate account saying this is going to be Johnny's education account and I'm just going to save it in my own name. They might do that because they don't want to give up control by putting it into a college savings 529 account. Let me explain 529s and then we'll go back to why the brokerage account may or may not work for some people. A college savings account, a 529, first of all, there's a couple different kinds of 529s. There's prepaid tuition plans with the state. So you can go direct to the state. It's kind of like a guaranteed payment. You're going to put so much money in and they're going to guarantee that you're going to be able to buy this much worth of education. So that's a prepaid tuition plan. Then there are 529 savings plans that you can purchase directly. We're going to call that a savings plan because now you're controlling it. You're controlling what it's invested in, and you're controlling whether, you know, you take money out or not. Your account could go up. Your account could go down. But you're controlling the monies a little bit. But by virtue of you gifting that money into a college savings account, for a beneficiary, a child, your future student, you have taken that money out of taxable accounts as long as you use it for qualified education expenses, and you've taken it out of your control, basically, there's still a little control there, such that it's considered a gift and it's out of your estate. So 529 plans in Pennsylvania have a lot of different benefits. If I put money in a 529 plan and I'm a resident of Pennsylvania, I get a deduction on my tax return. As long as I have, you know, income to offset that, I get a deduction on my tax return. It's out of my estate. It's not going to be subject to Pennsylvania inheritance tax. It's not going to be subject to estate taxes. So there's lots of advantages in Pennsylvania to setting up 529 accounts. We're going to talk a little bit later in the show about how that could complicate financial aid a little bit. But 529s look pretty good. And then if I take that money, invest it, and it starts earning, those earnings aren't taxable. It just accumulates in the account. And eventually, when my student goes to college and I take a distribution out for qualified education expenses, which is tuition, room and board, that type of thing, none of the earnings will be income taxable to me. So there's lots of advantages to that because now I've had this account that I've grown tax-free. Unlike if I had put the money in a savings account or in a brokerage account and invested it, those earnings, if I eventually take them out to pay for college and I have to sell the investments to pay for college, now those earnings are going to be taxable to me first. The reason some people might do that, though, is they don't want to necessarily give up the control of the 529 such that if your student doesn't go to college and you need to take the money out, because the IRS gave you those tax benefits all those years, if you don't use it for qualified education expenses, now the IRS is going to say, well, now we're going to tax the earnings. Well, that would have happened anyway, but now we're also going to put a 10% penalty on it. So some people are so worried about that 10% penalty, or they might think they might need the money or want the money, you know, over the next few years, that they want to keep it kind of in their own name. So that's one reason people save that way. We're going to talk more about this when we come back from our break. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
And we are back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We are talking about education planning this evening. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810 or through email at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can call and talk on air or off air. If off air, you just give your question to Judy Ann. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio to me this evening. So we've talked about websites, we've talked about important filing dates, and now we are talking about education savings opportunities, how different people save. We've talked about 529s, that there are something called prepaid tuition plans, typically through the state. They guarantee, you know, at some level, whatever you've put in will go toward tuition at some future date. And then just kind of self-savings plans. There's different kinds of 529s available that way as well. You can either do it yourself or you can use a financial advisor. So there's 529s of, you know, different elements of those. That website that I mentioned earlier, savingforcollege.com, they have lots of tools on that website where you can compare different states' plans and the different kinds of 529s that are available from all these different, what I'll call trustees or custodians. And you can look to see what might apply in your state. I want to tell you, though, in most states, you don't have to use the state that you reside in's plan. So just because I live in Pennsylvania does not mean that I have to use the 529 plan that's affiliated with Pennsylvania. I can use a plan from Virginia, Nevada, Alaska. So a lot of states offer, each state will have a plan that they offer themselves. Some states will give you an incentive on your tax return if you use their plan. Like maybe you could, if I'm a resident of Virginia and Virginia has its own 529 plan, I might get an extra deduction on my tax return in Virginia if I use Virginia's plan. Pennsylvania doesn't care what plan you use. You get a deduction in Pennsylvania. We're lucky enough that Pennsylvania allows that deduction. It's a great deduction, encourages education savings, etc. But Pennsylvania doesn't care what 529 plan you use. So when you go to savingforcollege.com, you can compare the different plans and just kind of know what state you live in and what kind of plan will work for you. Do you want to manage it yourself? Do you want someone to manage it for you? You can compare that. Look at all the fees, look at the performance, look at your options. So lots of good information there. The other thing about 529s, I mentioned the tax advantages. If you put money in, you get the deduction in Pennsylvania, it's out of your state. You get tax-free earnings and growth as long as you eventually use it for qualified education expenses. There's no income tax. You can also change owners. Certain plans you want to also compare. Make sure you can change owners during your lifetime. Sometimes, you know, I don't know if one of the owners might have to die in some of the plans, so you want to look at that. You can also change beneficiaries. So if you find that maybe you are doing it for one child or one grandchild and they end up getting all kinds of scholarships or grants, or they end up not going to college, you don't need the money for them, you can change the beneficiary on the 529 to a relative and then use the money for them. So that is a nice option. Sometimes the investment options, though, are more limited on 529s. So that may be another reason why we have some people doing their education savings maybe with their own individual account and not using a 529. It all depends on your goals and what you want to do. Some of the 529 plans we find will have target date funds now. So you can put the money in and it will, you know, adjust based on the eventual matriculation for college. So you want to look at 529s, what's going to work for you, and just make sure that in your other cash flow and savings and responsibilities and emergency reserves that you have yourselves covered as well. We don't want to people to give up their retirement savings or retirement, you know, goals to pay for children's college education. So you want to make sure you're taking care of yourself first, put that oxygen mask on for yourself first, and then take care of the college savings. But lots of different ways to do it, and just be aware. I sometimes even mention to folks that saving in a Roth IRA also is a good way if you're eligible to do Roth IRAs, because that also would be tax-free. Eventually, you could always take out your original contributions, but the Roth IRA accounts are retirement accounts, and those don't count toward assets that the family is expected to contribute for financial aid. So your 529 account does end up getting counted in a bit. I'll talk about that at the end of the show when we talk about the FAFSA and what they're using to calculate these formulas. So the retirement accounts are not counted as assets toward expected family contribution. So using Roth IRAs is another way to possibly save, but still be able to tap that money tax-free if you need it. You can always tap your original contributions. Folks, if you have questions, we're in the last part of our show, about 20-some minutes. So if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810 or through email at yourfinancialchoices.com. Let me get to some of the school tax credits that are available, because these are really great. And then I want to talk a little bit about the FAFSA and the formula at the end, so that for folks who still have time to plan for that January filing, maybe there's some things you could do in the next few months to get ready for that. So some of the school tax credits that you need to be aware of are the American Opportunity Tax Credit, the Lifetime Learning Credit, and there are also, I don't know if the student tuition fees credit is still available. That one I'll have to look up. But the big ones are the American Opportunity Tax Credit and the Lifetime Learning Credit. So let me touch on those. The American Opportunity Credit could be up to $2,500 annually for an eligible student. And the credit applies for the first 4 years of higher education. 40% of the credit is refundable. That means you may be able to get up to $1,000 of the credit as a refund, even if you don't pay taxes. So what happens with the American Opportunity Credit is if you've had tuition expenses and you have a dependent child, who it doesn't matter who's paying the tuition for that dependent child. It could be a grandparent. It could be done with student loans. Remember, I said, as long as you've had the tuition and you can claim the dependent child, any credits available because of that child flow to the person who's claiming them as the dependent. But there are income limitations. So, for example, in 2013, and the 2014 numbers would probably be very similar to this. The 2013 numbers are if you're married filing joint page one income is under $160,000, you would qualify for the full credit to offset your income taxes. It's a dollar for dollar offset of taxes up to $2,500. If you don't have income taxes, then you get the $1,000 refundable credit. So that's really good news. If you're single, it's under $80,000. There are phase out ranges, so between $160,000 and $180,000, you might not get the full credit, but you could get part of the credit. This is where you also want to plan, folks. So if you're someone who is kind of just like on the edge, maybe you're a new parent with a student in school for the first time, and you never thought about these education credits because you've never had to, because you never had kids in school before. Now is the time to start thinking about them because you want to look at your tax return last year. If your income is going to be pretty similar to 2013 when you look at 2014, maybe you were someone who had page one income of maybe, you know, $170,000. Well, you still might have time by the end of the year to maybe put more money into a 401k that would reduce your page one income. If you could reduce your page one income to get it under the $160,000, you could get this the full American Opportunity Credit. So sometimes it just takes a little tweak here and there on your income, which you can manipulate through contributions to 401k, maybe IRAs, maybe 403bs. Maybe you have a business and you don't need all the income this year, and you could have the invoice sent in January so that your income's a little lower this year. There's a number of different things you could do that you could try to make sure that you can get that American Opportunity Credit. That's available for undergrads. The credit that's available for graduate students is the Lifetime Learning Credit, and the Lifetime Learning Credit is up to $2,000. Again, that's a tax credit. It's up to $2,000. And there's no limit on the number of years you can claim that. The American Opportunity Credit is available for 4 years. It's the undergraduate program. You can't take it five. It's 4 years. The Lifetime Learning Credit, there's no limit on the number of years. It's up to $2,000. And what it basically is, when I say up to $2,000, it's 20% of up to $10,000 of expenses. So if you are someone in grad school, you're still working, but you're going and getting your master's, and your master's program cost you, you know, $25,000, and you paid $12,000 this year, and you're going to pay $12,000 next year. As long as you had $10,000 of expenses, you would be eligible for up to the $2,000 tax credit. And as long as you're page one income is within the thresholds, you could qualify for some great tax credits. So you want to just make sure that you have qualified expenses, qualified education expenses. You've heard me say that a lot. And that is typically your tuition, fees, other related expenses for the eligible student. And you want to just understand that the qualified education expenses for each of these credits or education opportunities might have certain restrictions. So you want to make sure you follow the rules on that. You also have to be careful because you have to coordinate the benefits. You can't, let's pretend you had $10,000 of tuition and you took $10,000 out of a 529 account. Well, the reason you can't double dip. You can't say I'm going to take $10,000 on my 529 and not pay any taxes on it and then take a credit for my Lifetime Learning Credit. It's like they're going to give you one benefit at a time. So typically what I'll tell folks to do is to make sure that, for example, for the American Opportunity Credit, that you have out-of-pocket expenses of at least $4,000 so that you qualify for the $2,500 credit. Use the 529 money to pay for everything else over that because it's like free money. So you don't want to lose free money. So lots of information as well available on the education credits. on the IRS's website. That's irs.gov, irs.gov, and you can look up questions and answers about education credits, frequently asked questions. You want to make sure that when you receive the 1098-T in the mail, that's T for tuition, the 1098-T from your educational institution, that you throw that in your tax file, in your tax folder, to talk to your tax advisor about whether or not you're going to qualify for these education credits. I am amazed at how many people are not aware of them, miss them, and folks, you only have 3 years to amend tax returns from your filing date, so you want to make sure that if you were one of those people who knew you had a kid in college, you know you paid tuition, whether it was with loans or out of pocket, your income has to be within those certain ranges, and if you think you're close, maybe you need to revisit whether or not you would have qualified for the education credits or expenses. Someone might say, oh, but, you know, grandma paid for it. Well, if grandma paid for it, as long as they're your dependent, you would still qualify for the education credit, meeting all the other criteria. Okay, when we come back, we're going to wrap up the show and finish talking about the FAFSA and the formula and what gets factored in and what you can do about it to get ready for next January. Phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And you are listening to WDIY Allentown, 88.1 FM and WDIY.org, serving the Lehigh Valley. Lehigh Valley weather, current conditions, 87 degrees under fair skies. Tonight, isolated thunderstorms, lows around 63. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, sunny skies each day with highs in the lower 80s. The time now is 6:47 p.m. Now back to your financial choices with our host, Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Jeff. We're wrapping up the final segment of the show talking about education planning. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810 or through the website yourfinancialchoices.com. I have to tell you, I have about 2 inches thick of paper that I printed today to get ready for the show tonight because there's just so much information and so much to know about education planning, different ways to save, different ways to pay for college, different credits that would be available, ways to, apply for financial aid. Financial aid could be from the federal government. Financial aid could be from the college, from the state. There's just a number of things. There's so much information. So I have some numbers in front of me, and I have different papers, but I'm going to try to boil this down for you. When you go to apply for the federal aid, it's on the free application for federal student aid, the FAFSA, the fafsa.ed.gov website. And typically you start filling that information out in January. And it's pretty, I think, well, I don't know if it's self-explanatory, but there's, because the FAFSA application was 10 pages, but some of the pages are explaining what the questions are trying to get at. So they try to give you a little bit more information. What's curious to me is, you go to fill out this form, and I'm sure there's people who probably try to do the best they can to fill it out on trying to understand the directions, and other people who fill it out to the best they can not understanding the directions. And I just wonder, how these get checked, because I think it could be quite complicated. And I think it gets more and more complicated as we have more, different kinds of assets and opportunities. I'm sure there's people who misunderstand when it says enter all your assets and you forget to read the fine print that says don't include your retirement accounts. And I'm sure that there's confusion when people say include this income, but you don't read the fine print that says include as income the amounts that grandma and grandpa took out of the 529 for your kid last year. And it's not really income, it's a resource. That's what I want to call it, a resource. But the FAFSA form might call it income. So if you don't read the fine print and all the details, I don't know how accurately these forms are getting filled out, but I'm sure you're signing under penalties of perjury. So you want to make sure that you're reading it the way that you really need to. So some of the details on this, I want to kind of give some general numbers. So for example, I've talked about 529s at length tonight. Now the 529s are going to be considered an asset that's available for the expected family contribution to pay for the student's tuition. And the parents' assets are available at 5.64%. Now, I have to mention that that is available after certain other adjustments. It's just way too complicated to get into in the last 10 minutes. But there's certain adjustments that are made. But basically, in your mind, think, okay, some of my assets are going to be available to pay for my child's education. Some of your income is as well. So the parents' expected family contribution basically from income, and that is also, there's a sliding scale on that. It's 22 to 47% on savingforcollege.com. I found that. But it's between 22 to 47% of parents' income, depending on how much income. But then there's also adjustments for that. So when I went through the expected family contribution calculation, what I found is you take your income basically on page one, your earnings from page one of your tax return or your W-2s, but then they let you factor in all these adjustments, which they call allowances against parents' income. They allow you an adjustment for federal income tax paid. They allow you for a deduction for a state and other tax allowance, which isn't the state tax on your state return. It's a formula calculation. They do it. You don't have to do it. I'm just telling you what's behind the numbers. I didn't know this until I went through the formula myself. So they take your income, they adjust it for your federal taxes paid, for a formula they apply for state taxes paid, and for Social Security taxes. So then they come down to a number. They also give you a credit against the income for something they call income protection allowance. It's based on a table. It depends on how big the family is, how many students are in the household, and they subtract all that from your income that's available. So I did an example of someone who made $218,000. It sounds like a lot, but I was just doing it as an example. So someone who made $218,000 actually had allowances of $86,000. So the available income for paying tuition was $131,000. I did another example where someone's income was $120,000 and kind of ballparked their allowances and came down to an available income of about $77,000. So someone who's making $218,000, you can pretty much count on not getting any aid almost in kind of some of the examples I ran, because there's so much income available. It depends on what assets are available as well. But if it looks like you can afford $58,000, you know, of your income towards your child's college education, chances are you might not get aid or too much aid. Most of the aid folks that is given in financial aid that we talk about, a lot of it is in loans and being eligible for loans. So sometimes it's not free aid, it's that self-help aid, either in loans or work study, as I mentioned earlier. So we look at the assets. The student may have assets that are included as well. So if a student has assets in their name alone, 20% of the student's assets will be included in the expected family contribution. And if the student has income, and that could be taxable income or not taxable income, and after certain allowances, 50% of the student's income would be expected to be contributed toward their college education. So one of the things that came up, there was a Wall Street Journal article that had talked about distributions from a grandparent's 529 was given to the child to pay for tuition. And let's say it was, I'm going to just give you an example. There wasn't an example. Let's say it was $10,000. That's included as like a resource of the students. Now, I mentioned that there's certain allowances that they give you against income. They gave the parents allowances for federal tax, state tax, Social Security tax. They give the student an allowance of $6,260. So I could give you an example of a 529 distribution to the student of $10,000 from grandparents. There's an allowance of $6,260. The amount that's available then for my purposes would be like $3,740. But only 50% of the student's income is deemed to be available. So it's that, whatever I just said, 3740 divided by two, it's like $1,800. So even though the grandparent gave the child $10,000, the expected contribution from the student for the next year would be $1,800. So their financial aid package would get hit by $1,800 for that little transaction. So you want to be careful when you have other family members who are setting up 529s for your children as well, because it's not just your 529. It might be the grandparents' 529. Who's making the distributions? When are they making the distributions? Is this going to affect financial aid? So anytime you know you're eligible for financial aid, you have to be very careful about the strategies you're using with family members or yourself and when you're taking distributions out. If you do it in the last year, it won't matter. So you could have grandma or grandpa save the 529 distributions for the last year. It might not even matter if you do it in the first year. Or it might not matter at all, because if grandma and grandpa distribute $6,260, which is that allowance they allow students, if grandma and grandpa distribute $6,260 and the child doesn't have any income anyway, you have $6,260 of this distribution, less their allowance. It's not going to affect the financial aid contribution from the student, because they, in effect, wouldn't have any. So coordinate with family members. Know how much people are putting into 529s. Grandparents, if you're putting money into 529s for your grandchildren, make sure your kids know it. There are limits on how much to put into a 529 for a student. You don't want to go over those limits. I also tell folks, don't over contribute. Don't contribute too much, because you're not giving yourself any flexibility there. So do it in part. Check and know if you're going to be eligible for financial aid. Be careful how you're taking distributions. Just watch what you're doing. Okay, so be careful in those details as far as 529 goes. All right. Let's see. What else do we have to talk about education planning? I'm exhausted from talking about education planning. I wanted to read some statistics. That's what I wanted to do. There was a study done in 2011-2012, National Post-Secondary Student Aid Study. So I'm amazed that some people think they're going to qualify for financial aid when they make, you know, $500,000 a year. Because here are some statistics, and this was for, I believe, as I said, it was a 2011-2012 study, but it was dependency and income in 2010. There was a family, $100,000 or more, the statistics showed, so if you made $100,000 or more, the federal aid grant that were issued, 0.8%. Student loans were at about 44%. Now, here was a number that I thought was important. The institutional aid, that college aid, was 37.6%. So for all those folks out there who think that they're not going to qualify for federal financial aid, you might not. But you still should fill out the financial aid forms in case your student might qualify for some college aid. And the college aid isn't always need-based. I know that my daughter received quite a nice scholarship for her academic achievements. And again, we still had to fill out a FAFSA form just for, the school, so that they could probably determine how much they were going to give her. The other thing to keep in mind, too, is there are certain free grants available through the government at the state level that once the money runs out, it's gone. And that's the Federal Supplemental Educational Opportunity Grant. It's up to $4,000. It's like first come, first serve. So if there's need-based exceptional financial need, The Pell Grant would apply first. That's up to $5,730, and then this federal supplemental, and that's a first-come, first-served. That's given to the states for states that participate. You've got to check to see if your state participates. But it all comes down to filling out that FAFSA form. So, again, sometimes most of the aid that's given might be in student loans, depending on your income level. For those over $100,000, for sure. For people making $80,000 to $100,000, it was 2.8%. So you don't have to make too much money to all of a sudden not qualify for financial aid. But still fill out the forms, because you might get good rates on student loans, or you might get institutional aid from the college. Show went fast. Lots of information. Hope it was helpful tonight. If you want to listen to the show again, the podcast will be available probably in the next few days on WDIY.org or through yourfinancialchoices.com. I want to thank the listeners. Thanks for the questions. Thanks, Judy Ann, Jeff. Next week, I'm going to follow up to Labor Day. I'll be looking at the financial aspects of labor and earning power. See if we can look at some statistics there and what's going on in the labor markets. We'll see if I can talk about that. Coming up next, Tom Druckenmiller within the tradition, folk music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.